How's everybody doing?
Great.
All right. Tonight we will continue our look into the book of Esther. Can we name the four main characters in the book of Esther? Somebody name one of them.
Esther.
Yes, you got the first. That's the easy one. What's the next one?
Mordecai,
yes. What's that? We got Esther, we got Mordecai. What's that? Haman, yes. There's one more guy that's like so good.
Xerxes,
you got it. Yeah, those are the four main characters in the book of Esther. Xerxes, Esther, Mordecai, and Haman. So we're going to actually start digging into the book now. So let's go to Esther chapter 1. Esther chapter 1, I'm just going to read verses 1 through 9. Now it took place in the days of Ahasuerus, I think that's how you say that. I learned it in Xerxes. The Ahasuerus, who reigned from India to Ethiopia over 127 provinces. In those days, as King Xerxes sat on his royal throne, which is the citadel in Susa, in the third year of his reign, he gave a banquet for all his princes' attendants, the army, officers, the Persian, Media, the nobles, the princes of his province being in his presence. He displayed the riches of his royal glory and the splendor of his majesty for many days, 180 days. When the days were completed, the king gave a banquet lasting 7 days for all the people who were present in the citadel in Susa, from the greatest to the least in the court of the garden of the king's palace. There were hangings of fine white linen held by cords of fine purple linen on silver rings, marble columns, couches of gold and silver on a mosaic pavement of porphyry, marble, mother of pearl and precious stones. Drinks were served in golden vessels of various kinds, and the royal wine was plentiful according to the king's bounty. The drinking was done in according to the law. There was no compulsion, for so the king had given orders to each official of his household that he should do according to the desires of each person. Queen Vashti also gave a banquet for the women in the palace which belonged to King Ahasuerus. Like I said, we look at King Ahasuerus last week. He was the son of a king. He was probably one of these people you've seen him in life. I used to work for very affluent people. Honestly, the guy probably never worked an honest day's work in his life. Okay, he was born from royalty. He was in royalty. That was his life. He was a life that was brought up in wealth and position. He was used to pretty much getting his way. The book of Esther starts 3 years into Ahasuerus' reign. So who was he? He was literally, if you look at Persia, he was probably the most powerful person in the world. Because at this time in history, Persia was the most powerful nation in the world. We can read it as we read there. It says, he reigned over 127 provinces, covering the territory from India to Kush. This pretty much, took care of most of the known world. You had the Chinese out there, but most of what we would consider the main world, he had control of that. The Bible does this to give us a physical picture of the greatest that this world has to offer. Our world can look very tantalizing at times, can't it? And it can. I mean, you see it, the uber wealthy. I know some of those in Bozeman, they've worked up in Big Sky. I think Mr. Serrano, we have here tonight. I'm super glad to see him. But he's worked up in Big Sky. They got some cash up there, right? They don't want for much. They have people that manage their people. I mean, they literally do. I know Jeff Bezos has a squad of people that, but he has one manager that then manages them and they manage his houses. I mean, it's stupid how much money they have and the power that they have. So we have here in Esther a picture of the ruler of the known world, and he has whatever he wants, he can have. And if he can't have it, well, he'll make sure that it can happen. Have it. So the world's most powerful individual is sitting right here. What does he do with that power? Does he feed the world? cure world hunger? Does he go out and try to aid those who are hurting physically? Send money, send food to the leper colonies, whatever it, no. He throws a party. And this isn't a normal party. I mean, you know, when you're teenagers, you know, wild Friday night parties and stuff like that, or even, oh, parents are gone, we're going to party all weekend. No, this blew all those out of the water. This was a half of year party. It was a 180 days party. See, we get this here so we get a picture into his mindset. It was King Xerxes. He was a guy who liked comfort. He liked the flesh. As we're going to see as we go through that, that is who he is. We clearly see that he's not really a moral man. He's not a servant of the people. He takes and throws a half-year party. And really, what was the purpose of this party? Was it to make sure his guests all came, shake all their hands, greet them, and encourage them? No, I bet there were quite a few statues of him around. It was to glorify him. It was his ego. He brings the governors, the nobles, the princes. Why does he bring them to the party? Because they're going to suck up to him. Because if you don't suck up to King Xerxes, you could lose your head and your life. Okay, this is in the book of Esther, so we can start to get a picture of really who he is. If you were invited to that party, what do you think would happen if you turned it down? Bad things. You might be killed. I mean, it was a time where whatever the king said happened, as we're going to see as we dig into this. This party was basically there to show off and display the power and majesties of King Xerxes. I still don't think I'm saying that right. Verse 4 says, flat out, he displayed the riches, glory, and the splendor of his great majesty. That was what that party was for. So he's the man. If you actually look in the book of Esther, I searched to search on it, 28 times his name gets mentioned in the book of Esther. The majority of the known world was under his control. Whatever he wanted, he could have. So for the first 180 days, he has this, and all of those in power and position are brought into the kingdom so they can see how powerful he is. If that wasn't enough, after that party's over, well, we need to have the cooling down party, I guess. So for 7 days, they have a party, and it's for the palace officials only. So the first one, you know, they brought in all sorts of people from around, but this one was for those local to the palace. It goes on continuing to describe the wealth of the kingdom. Expensive hangings, golden drinking vessels, wine for everyone. It was basically, if you wanted wine, you got it. So, if you're reading this, why is this in the book of Esther? Why is this in the book of Esther? Anyone want to guess? Why does God lay all of this out? Well, mankind can do some pretty cool stuff, you know. I saw Elon Musk's net worth was now over $200 billion. There's another guy, I think he's from back east, India or something. He's a telecom giant, and then they tie back and forth over $200 billion. You can't spend $200 billion in your lifetime. You probably would be hard pressed to spend $1 billion in your lifetime. When you hit those numbers, now it's just a contest for them to glorify themselves. I do know that, when Elon Musk took over Twitter, it was a problem because you couldn't disagree with him. You disagree with Elon Musk, and it's not going to go very well. Okay, people didn't come around that would tell him the truth. Yeah. And if $200 billion isn't enough, I do believe that if you take all of the Arabian families in the Middle East, you're talking now trillions. There's one family back there. It's not an individual, but it's a family. It's worth over $1 trillion. Man, usually when he has this much wealth, he shows off. He indulges every physical pleasure that they can think of, moral or not, legal or not. Sadly, we have that around here. You think a lot of times that a lot of the drug culture, well, it's, you know, down at, you know, Central and Shiloh at the marijuana shop or something. But no, a lot of the highly illegal stuff, the illegal, you know, trafficking and stuff, it's done by the power people in our country. It's very sad. It's very sad with that much money that they couldn't find something good to do with it. But it's not a new story, because that's the same story we have way back here in the book of Esther. Jump to Ecclesiastes chapter 1. Keep your bookmark in Esther 1, because we will be coming back here. Guarantee that. Ecclesiastes 1. Just 9 through 11. That which has been is that which will be, and that which has been done is that which will be. So is there nothing new under the sun? Is there anything of which one might say, see, this is new? Already existed it for ages, which was before us. There is no remembrance of earlier things, and also of latter things, which will occur. That we know there will be for them no remembrance among those who will come later still. This is written about today. Everything, there's nothing new under the sun. But man, in his quest for physical pleasure, wants to find something new under the sun. So they come up with the most morbid things they can think of, and they try to fill those God-shaped holes there. Try every pleasure, legal or not. Buy everything in sight, every relationship, whatever it may be. But all is vanity, striving after the wind. Ahasuerus was the most powerful man in the world. He was not a moral man at all. Here's one of the cool things about this, though. God is actually going to use him, even though he's not a part of his kingdom. God is going to use him to accomplish his purpose. That's why the book of Esther, as we bring this up a few times as we go through it, God's going to use all of this to make sure he gets his point or his mission accomplished. Back in the book of Esther. Here's an interesting thing as well. Xerxes throws this huge party. In verse 9, we see that Vashti holds another party specifically for the women. Ahasuerus was historically a womanizer. You know, history will say that about him. That was his character. He liked women. You probably don't need to go through history. You can look in the Bible and see really quickly he had a problem with women right out of the chute. He had a harem. That harem gets brought out in the book. We see here that Vashti was queen at the time. Looking up in history will tell us that the queen of Persia's name was Amestris. So there's really two possible explanations for the Bible saying Vashti and history saying Amestris. First is that they're the same person. Historically, Amestris was Ahasuerus' wife before he took the throne. So basically, she was with him as he went up the scale and got his power. I don't really believe that that's actually what happened. If you actually look and you see powerful men, specifically, as they gain power, what do they do once they have their power and their wealth and their riches? They chuck the lady. Okay? Bezos did that. You know, it's proven he had an affair well before you know, he got divorced from his wife. Bill Gates did that. You know? And they're not anomalies. Those are just ones that are such high-profile money that basically they made the news. That's probably not what happened. Most likely, they're two different people. Vashti was probably and most likely the principal head of the harem. And we're going to see why this actually dovetails in and actually fits really nicely. But she was most likely the queen or the lead first wife of the harem. And as what we know of Ahasuerus' character, it fits. You know, he liked women. You know, most likely he had a huge harem. And so most likely he had one that he really cared for more than the others. Cared for, I use in air quotes. Let's read verses 10 through 12. So on the seventh day, when the heart of the king was merry with wine, he commanded Mehum, Bistha, Harbana, Bigtha, Abitha, Zethar, and Carcass, the seven eunuchs who served in the presence of King Ahasuerus, to bring Queen Vashti before the king with her royal crown in order to display her beauty to the people and the princes, for she was beautiful. But Queen Vashti refused to come to the king's command delivered by the eunuchs. The king became very angry, and his wrath burned within him. So have you ever wondered this and thought, why didn't she just go? Really? I mean, because as this plays out, she's going to, even if she wasn't the true queen, she was, you know, the lead harem or the queen that the one he liked out of all of them the most. You know, she obviously had position, she had power, she had some authority, she had something. She was able to hold her own party without him, you know. Clearly she knew she was going by turning. Now we get a picture there, and what happens if you don't obey the king? So why do you think? Anybody got any ideas why she didn't go? Did anybody ever wonder? Go. Nolan?
Yeah, I wondered.
You've wondered? Here, I can.
Well, I think you already answered it in your explanation of his character. So it's like, what, you're going to, I mean, you answer this call, it's the end of the feast that's been going on forever. You know you're a puppet queen, so to speak, and that he's probably been very affectionate towards a lot of other gals. I'm not sure I'd go either.
Yeah, that's actually part of it. There's one key part that, at least, again, history. Is there any more? Ha! That history will lean towards.
History would tell us that she wasn't invited to show up with clothing on.
Exactly right. That's really the key there, you know. And it makes sense. Most likely, you know, and most historians are pretty confident in this, given his character and his nature. He wanted to come naked. He wanted to show her off. He was showing off everything else. Look at all my money. Look at my gold. Look at my wine. Look at all my officials. He was probably, you know, not three sheets. He was probably about 100 sheets to the wind at this point, fairly drunk. And he's like, hey, I'm going to show off my wife. And I'm going to, or my best-looking wife. And she's going to bring all of her wares and assets with her. And so most likely that's what he probably said. You know, it's the most plausible theory that fits there. And when you add that into the context, everything kind of falls into place. We now understand what drove the response she sent. She wasn't going to, and this is actually a credit to her. Sometimes you can look at this and, you know, see her in a bad light. But no, she saw him for what he was and what he was going to do. And he was not going to be exploited by her. To appear nude before a bunch of drunk politicians and just be displayed basically as a trophy. She wasn't going to do it no matter what the cost. And you really have to respect that decision and the stance that she took, even if it did cost her. But everything in life costs if you're going to stand for something, you know, and she stood for that. This one thing that's really is cool about this as well is, what if Vashti had went? And the book of Esther would end right there. Okay? You know, Vashti's refusal to come before the king, it was just one effect that had to happen to get Esther to the throne. Vashti appears, no Esther, no party, no Esther to deliver the Jews. See, God's hand is at work, even through the crazy events that happen in this world around us. I was talking with my family, and it's been a real crazy last few years. We have a chance to really, really start to see what crazy will look like. Can you even fathom getting to the November elections next year? It's going to get crazier, I think, because, you know, Biden's a train wreck, and Trump, they're doing everything they can basically to off him. the only thing that will get you through that is believing that God actually is has his hand in all of that train wreck. Nothing else will. Can you believe that God would have his hand in, you know, all of that mess that we call Washington? Well, if God can have his hand in this, God can have his hand in that too. He can. He's got that under control. Verse 12 in Esther 1 ends with the king's wrath burning within him. Has anyone ever, and I mean, if you've done it once, I want to know what it is. Has anyone ever made a good decision when you're mad? I know I have not, and my wife will verify that. I've never made a good decision when I'm angry, upset, whatever. You know, road rage never turns out good, okay? It just doesn't. So Ahasuerus's angry. He's mad. Vashti will not appear. So he makes a rash decision. He basically says, he starts making a series of rash decisions. Again, goofy, rash decisions that are going to get the best of him, but going to be to work for God's glory. Let's read 13 through 22. Then the king said to the wise men who understood the times, for it was the custom of the king, so to speak, before all who knew law and justice, and were close to him, Karshina, Shethathar, Admatha, Tarshish, Meres, Marsin, and Mumuk, the seven princes of Persia and Media, who had access to the king's presence, and sat in the first place in the kingdom, or according to the law, what is to be done with Queen Vashti, because she did not obey the command of King Xerxes, delivered by the eunuchs. In the presence of the king and the princes, Memucan said, Queen Vashti is wrong, not only the king, but also all the princes and all the people who are in the province of King Xerxes. For the queen's conduct will become known to all the women, causing them to look with contempt on their husbands and say, by saying, King Ahasuerus commanded Queen Vashti to be brought into his presence, but she didn't come. This day the ladies of Persia and Media who have heard of the queen's conduct will speak in the same way to all the king's princes, and there will be plenty of contempt and anger. If it pleases the king, let a royal edict be written in the laws of Persia and Media so that it cannot be repealed, that Vashti may no longer come into the presence of King Ahasuerus. And let the king give her royal position to another who is more worthy than she. When the king's edict, which he will make, is heard throughout all the kingdom, great as it is, then all the women will give honor to their husbands, great and small. This word pleased the king and the princes, and the king did as Memucan proposed. So he sent letters to all the king's provinces, to each province according to its script, and to every people according to their language. That every man should be master in his own house, and the one who speaks in the language of his own people. So the king consults, and it's very interesting to say, see, the king said to the wise men who understood the times. So these were the smartest minds in Persia right now that he's talking to. Ironically, they're going to give him really bad advice. So be careful who you listen to. Why? And I'll kind of lay out why it was really bad advice in a minute. But what do you think those advisors were actually concerned about as the king's talking to them? Was that? Themselves. They were worried about themselves. Okay? You have an angry king in front of you. Okay? If you say the wrong thing, you know, when Joseph went before the king of Egypt, you know, for the interpreting the two guys' dreams, you know, one guy was good, one guy was bad, you know. One guy got his head cut off, one guy got his position back. Okay? You got an angry king before you, watch out. Because heads are going to roll. Okay, and they wanted to make sure that it wasn't their head. As I said earlier, that's the problem with power. It's very hard to get an honest answer from people. People who surround others in power get more concerned with keeping that and pleasing in that power than giving an honest answer. If you don't believe me, go to Washington, D.C. But an honest rebuke is really what Ahasuerus needed to hear. If he were an honest man and wanted honest answers, he went to the wrong people. Memucan answers that Vashti has wronged not only the king, but takes it a step further and says this will disrupt all of Ahasuerus' rule. The whole world as they know it will be thrown off kilter, and women everywhere will start disrespecting their husbands. What would have been required for that to happen? For that actually, for all these women everywhere to hear about this? Well, somehow it would have had to have gotten out. Okay? I mean, it really didn't. This would have died out if he let it die out. Okay? No one was going to go tell all these princes and all these women everything that happened, and it really didn't have to go that far. If Ahasuerus just let this blow over, if he had looked at himself and realized that his request was really not a reasonable one at all, this whole thing could have died out. Jump to Proverbs 15:1. A gentle answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger. Okay? A gentle answer. Just let this die. Okay? But anger, just pouring more gas on the fire, made things worse. In the king's anger, he ends up making things a lot worse instead of just letting this die. And what happens when all this blows over, he's going to realize this. And then his advisors will too start to try to figure out how to keep the king happy and how to keep their heads. Looking in there, you know, see it ends in verse 21. This word pleased the king. Why did it please the king? It stroked his ego. You know, again, going back to be careful who you listen to, and be reflective of your state of mind when you listen to advice. You know, if we're really angry and upset and listening, is that really, and if someone's just trying to tell you what you want to hear, is that really, you know, good? No, that's not good at all. Get advice from people who will be honest with you, not from those with ulterior motives. Truth may hurt, but in the end, it's going to yield the best fruit. So this edict ends up going out, and it goes to every man that he is master in his own house. If you need a letter from a king to tell you that you're, or a letter from Joe Biden to tell you that you're master in your house, do you really think you're master in your house? No. Okay. You shouldn't need a letter to say that you're leading your household. Hopefully, your household knows you're leading them by you leading them. Okay. Xerxes needed the letter because he blew it. Okay. Respect and leadership are something that is earned, not forced, at least in the true sense of things. Jesus showed us this. Jump to Luke 22. Verse 24 through 27. And there arose a dispute among them as to which one of them was regarded to be greatest. See, this clamoring for position is nothing new. He said to them, the kings of the Gentiles lorded over them, and those who have authority over them are called benefactors. But it is not this way with you, but the one who is greatest among you must be like the youngest, the leader like the servant. Who is greater, the one who reclines at the table or one who serves? Is it not the one who reclines at the table? But I am among you as one who serves. To be great and to show care and concern for others, to show it by our actions. Okay, the greatest military leaders are not those who went out and told their troops to follow. They're those who actually went out with their troops and were in the trenches with them. I just read a really great book. It was on the Maccabees, actually. It was a historical book. But Judah Maccabees, who was the leader of the Maccabees, they were the intertestamental period. And, you know, he loved his soldiers. He was always there with them, and that really propelled them and why they could actually take on the Seleucids. But any great leader out there really cares about their people. To be great is to show care and concern for those around you. When you lead by this example, you get true respect and buy-in from those who follow you. If you have to get a note from the king to say, yes, you must follow me, are people really following you? They just do what they have to do to, in the moment. Xerxes' decree didn't really do anything but add fire to the issue at hand and maybe made him feel like he was doing some governing. Again, he wasn't really a leader of the people. But by sending this out to all the males to tell them they're heads of their father's house or heads of their household, well, look, I just did something good today. He didn't do anything good. He's, you know, like most government action today, it was just smoke and mirrors and actually made the situation worse. Back in Esther, let's read chapter 2, verses 1 through 4. After these things, when the anger of King Xerxes had subsided, he remembered Vashti and what she had done, what had been decreed against her. Then the king's attendants served him, said, let beautiful young virgins be sought for the king. Let the king appoint overseers in all the province of his kingdom, that they may gather every beautiful young virgin to the citadel of Susa, to the harem, and to the custody of Haggai, the king's eunuch, who's in charge of the women, and let their cosmetics be given them. And yet let the young lady who pleases the king be queen in place of Vashti. And the matter pleased the king, and he did accordingly. The things start to settle down and get back to life. When I read this book, I remember for a long time when I read it, I'm like, okay, king loses Vashti, doesn't have Vashti, next day is sad. No, this actually is probably about a 3 to 4 year period in between here, is what most historians believe. So there was a little period. If so, part of what might have drove this is Ahasuerus' unsuccessful attack on Greece. Because that would have happened in that 3 to 4 year period. So maybe during that period, he's like, okay, well, you know, I was busy trying to take on Greece. Didn't work out. You know, it's kind of like Karen. If I'm kicking around the house too much, she's like, okay, he's going to start doing something dumb. Causing trouble. Okay. You know, the king should have been out there leading the people. He wasn't out there leading the people, so he's around the house. Oh, there's nothing really to do. I think I need a new queen. Those who were around him probably might have saw the king was getting a little edgy. So Ahasuerus' decree starts to basically come back to haunt him. You know, he feels bad. He remembers Vashti. He liked her from a physical perspective, and she's not around anymore. One thing about the decrees that he made, it was a royal decree, so it couldn't be undone. We'll see this later on as we go through the book. They were pretty adamant that once these things get done, they're done. It's law. So he couldn't bring her back, even being the most powerful person in the world. And so he's not happy. For anyone who looks to the physical perspective, you know, he's going to say something's missing and he needs to get that fixed. There's a saying out there that if mom ain't happy, nobody's happy. Like I said, well, if the king isn't happy, people could start losing their lives. So he consults his attendants and they say, get a new queen. Out with the old, bring in the new. If we ever had any doubts about the character of Ahasuerus, it gets revealed here. Each young woman would have a time to pretty herself up, you know, however long that would take, be part of the harem and whatnot. And every beautiful young virgin would be brought to the harem and let the young lady who pleases the queen in place of Vashti be queen. And that matter pleased the king. Now, you would hope that you say, oh, I'm going to bring him in, I'm going to talk with him, get to know them. No, that's not really how he's going to work. He's basically going to, each woman's going to get a night with the king, and he's going to decide if he wants to keep her or not. the gal that wins would become queen. Did you ever wonder about all those who didn't become queen? Yeah.
What was your question?
Did you ever wonder about all the women that went through this process and didn't become queen?
Yeah, there was a movie about 6-7 years ago, maybe called A Night with the King.
Yeah.
That was really good. I don't know if you got to see it.
Yeah, it's a very good movie.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance, that is a great, that's a great point, Randy. Yeah, like I say, movies are movies. You know, there's a little bit of a Hollywoodized in them. But A Night with the King, it was a good movie. It's a depiction of the Book of Esther. So, yeah, that's a good point. But all these women were brought through, and they would go back and be part of the harem. Their lives were pretty much over. They would be physically, you know, taken care of. The king might come and visit them, might not. Maybe that was it. But any hopes and dreams they had of marrying and having a family were pretty much gone, dashed. Did that matter to Ahasuerus? No, I doubt it even went through his brain. He was only looking out and trying to figure out what was best for him. Why this is in the scripture, it shows, again, a very selfish man. From the perspective of the young female population of the kingdom, this was a very tragic event. Did God make this happen? This is one of these things I get into. I've had various discussions. I know I had a lot of discussions with Luke Wilson about this. Does God cause everything to happen, or does God let everything happen? It's like two sides of the same coin to me. You say let. Yeah, he definitely lets everything happen. God doesn't stop bad things from happening. Was this a bad thing for all these gals? Yeah, well, it was. It was a raw deal. Okay, but he didn't stop that from happening. Sometimes it's part of the plan, bringing in something greater. Okay, because God has everything under control. We can see that in Scripture. He could have stopped Ahasuerus' heart. Okay? But he had a bigger plan in mind, something bigger that he was trying to get across. God uses history no matter what happens. At the end of the day, it is all his plan. There's nothing happening out there that's not a surprise to God. And this book is great for this. I encourage you, you know, if you're stressing out with the country around us, read this book. Okay, God has it all figured out. Okay, yeah, no one.
Yeah, I was just thinking about the comment, does he allow it or does he cause it? And then my brain went to Romans where it says, God causes all things to come together for good for those who love him and those who have been called according to his purpose. So I reckon he allows it to happen. And the thing God causes is he brings it together for good. And like you said, the kind of your comment there at the end. So as far as what does God cause, I'd argue the Bible says he causes what people do to bring it together for good. The death of Jesus being one of those things.
Yeah, great point. Great comment. I couldn't say any better. You know, it's just, yeah. Our world looks like a train wreck. It's always looked like a train wreck. Okay? And that's what's so amazing about God is out of this train wreck, he can make the coolest things happen. So yeah. God uses history however he sees fit. His will be done. Think our country's a mess. Believe it or not, God has this whole thing figured out. They are literally playing into his hand. Jump to Proverbs chapter 21, verse 1. The king's heart is like channels of water in the hand of the Lord. He turns it wherever he wishes. Okay. Does that go with the king's heart? You know, does that mean the king is necessarily following him? I don't know. But God's going to turn our country wherever he wishes. Okay. He's going to turn every country. I mean, he will get his purpose done. Is his purpose, maybe his purpose is for us to suffer. Because through suffering, that's the biggest opportunity for the gospel to get out, for people to see real faith. Might be. You never know. You know, God does have this whole thing figured out. Let's jump to 1 Thessalonians chapter 4. I'm going to read verses 9 through 12. Now, so love of the brethren, you have no need for anyone to write to you, for you yourselves are taught by God to love one another. For indeed you do practice it toward all the brethren who are in all Macedonia, but we urge you, brethren, to excel still more, and to make it your ambition to lead a quiet life, to tend to your own business, and work with your hand just as we commanded you, so you will behave properly toward outsiders and not be in any need. I bring this up because as we go through this, you're going to see Esther and Mordecai are average people. Esther is very, beautiful. We're going to see she's got an amazing character. But she was just your average person. Mordecai, he's going to have some privilege to actually be in the court of the king. But he's nobody special. Their desire was just to live a life. Okay? But I don't believe they ever aspired to greatness. But we will see as we go throughout their lives that when the circumstances are thrust upon them, they rise to the occasion. Because of their character, which was created earlier on in their life, they're able to accomplish God's purpose with their lives. They were just humble servants of God. Isn't that what the church is? It really is. Okay. I have no idea if someone in this room may eventually become president. You never say never. You never know. Maybe someone here will take over a whole country for the Lord. I don't know. I have no idea how it will all play out. But Esther and Mordecai, they didn't really dream big, but when big things happen, they were ready and prepared. I guess there's a great book to really encourage us to be prepared when something, because you never know what may happen. They were able to take advantage of the situation around them because they were ready, because they were prepared, they had the right character. That's really what the church should be today, and I think that's part of the message from the book of Esther. So I'm going to wrap her up right there.